Welcome to the Wolverine Confidential Podcast. I am Andrew Kahn.
I'm Ryan Zook.
And I'm Aaron McMahon.
On this episode, we talk about the Michigan baseball team's heartbreaking and controversial loss in the NCAA tournament, some football recruiting news, and what might become of the men's basketball roster. Coming up on Wolverine Confidential. All right, guys, good to be talking with you here Tuesday, June 7th in the morning. We will start with the baseball team. Their season is over. It ended in the NCAA tournament yesterday on Monday. I guess for those, you know, listeners who only get their Michigan athletics news from this podcast, I guess we can update from where we left off, which is in the NCAA regional in Louisville, Kentucky. Michigan beat Oregon. They beat Louisville. So they're in great position. They're up. You know, they've won their first two games. Louisville then, you know, goes to the loser's bracket, but they beat Oregon, you know, to get a, you know, rematch with Michigan, and they win that game on Sunday 20-1, and then that sets up a winner take all, you know, yesterday to move on to the super regional, and Louisville wins that game 11-9. But that's just the end. That's the most important fact. But so much happened leading up to that we'll get into here. I'll just break it down real quick before I send it to Zook. Michigan goes up 2-0 right away, top of the first. Louisville comes back with a 7th spot in the bottom of the inning, all with two outs. Michigan hits a home run in the third to make it 7-3, and that's when we have a delay, you know, weather, rain, and lightning in the third inning. But when we come back, Michigan's able to tie the game at 7 in the fifth on a pair of home runs and take the lead in the sixth, 9-7. But then it started to fall apart for Michigan in the eighth. Again, another two-out rally, two outs. Louisville hasn't scored yet. Michigan's still up two runs. And some tough calls on ball strikes, calls at home plate. And then a play at second base where it looked like maybe the runner was out. He's called safe. It's upheld by review. And the floodgates open from there. Louisville scores four runs. They go up 11-9. And Michigan cannot score in the top of the ninth. And that's how it ends.
Yeah, absolutely wild game. I mean, you forget about the rain delay too. Like it was just an insane regional final. And yeah, I mean, I the balls and strikes, I mean, there was missed balls and strikes on both sides all game. And that happens all the time in college baseball, college softball. So, I mean, that it's hard to be upset with, but I mean, if you're a Michigan fan, you have to be pretty upset about that upheld call, because it definitely looks on replay that the tag was applied before the runner was able to touch second base. But again, like the replay angles they were showing, they were pretty blurry when they zoomed in.
Yeah.
And like I feel like you needed an angle from like the pitcher's mound to see, because it's tough to see when exactly his hand touched the bag. It definitely looked like the tag was applied before then, but it was just a weird angle. And the rule states it has to be clear and conclusive evidence. And with the blurriness and the angle there was a little bit of ambiguity there. So it's like, I mean, you definitely think that it's just a tough break for Michigan, but you would hope that they would have a different angle to kind of show that he was tagged out. But a tough call for Michigan. And then, yeah, the two batters later, pimped out two-run home run that I still don't think has landed. I mean, that was an absolute moonshot. And after that, it's like, man, that's going to be tough to bounce back in the ninth. And Michigan got a leadoff double in the ninth, too, but wasn't able to capitalize. Had a run, or a Jimmy Overtop, who had a three-run home run in the game, worked a 3-0 count. But then the pitcher bounced back to strike him out. And after that, it's like, it's going to be tough. So, yeah, go ahead, Aaron.
No, I was just going to say the throw looked like it certainly beat the runner. But in this day and age of replay, like you said, the further it got slowed down, it was close. And you know, with replay, everything needs to be conclusive to overturn a decision. And the umps felt like it was inconclusive. And I tend to agree. You know, it looked close. Like you said, it was tough to tell. And it's tough to tell. If there's question marks, then, you know, officials and referees and umpires are hesitant to overturning it. So it was a tough break for Michigan. They played well. They battled back. It was the theme of the weekend. I mean, not theme of the weekend. They played well all weekend. They hit the ball well. And it wasn't like uncharacteristic of them. They've hit the ball well all season long, but they got timely pitching and they got enough pitching. And you thought they were going to make a run. It looked like they were going to make a run. I mean, they needed to win what one of those final two games, couldn't do it. It was an entertaining weekend of college baseball, not just Michigan, across the board. It was fun to watch some of these games.
The play at second. I mean, there was probably some conjecture involved as far as you couldn't, the runner's fingers seemed to bend back as, you know, at the glove, you would think that it was the glove doing that, but you really couldn't see that it was the glove. So I guess you could have a theory where he just did that on his own with his fingers. He spread them and pushed them back. Would have been the first player I've ever seen to do that. But so that's the thing. It seems like those fingers get pushed back by the glove, and that's certainly before he hits the base. But I guess it just goes back to, can you be certain that it's the glove that did that?
Bottom line, if the umpire called him out on the field, it for sure would have upheld as an out call as well. So it was just a matter of what was called on the field, probably would have been upheld either way. Just unfortunate for Michigan that it was an out call on the field. But hey, it all started with a 2-out walk. So yep. Again, Cameron Weston had retired 8 in a row and then walks a guy with 2 outs and kind of the floodgates open there. And then the guy that hit a double, I mean, that was almost a 2-run homer anyway. So they were making some pretty hard contact in that inning. But yeah, with that relay and how quickly they got it in, that would have been a huge momentum builder for Michigan to get that out and take the 2-run lead into the ninth inning.
You know, this team deserves a lot of credit for, I mean, what they, of course, they needed to win the Big Ten tournament. They did that. You know, and then they go on the road for the regional, and you know, they really did never quit. I mean, you know, you lose 20-1 to a team and you got to play them the next day. That's got to be a little, you know, disheartening, but you know, they fall down 7-2 after one inning and they battle back from that. So there's like no doubt in my mind, that they could have come back even there in the ninth, you know, after as dispiriting as that the bottom of that eighth was, you know, the team just, they didn't quit. But in the end, you know, they come up a little bit short and their season ends.
Yeah, that rain delay, I think, definitely benefited Michigan to regroup a little bit. Louisville starter had to be taken out of the game after an over hour delay. Kind of like a little bit of a reset button for the Wolverines. And then, yeah, I mean, hit 4 home runs in the game. they're hitting the ball pretty hard. And yeah, when they took that 2-run lead, it's like, wow, this would be a pretty remarkable comeback. And a lot of similarities to that 2019 run when no one expected them to even be in the tournament. And then they just went on a crazy run in the NCAA tournament. And yeah, just 4 outs away from advancing to a super regional for the second time in 3 years. And, just came up a little bit short.
So that's a wrap on the baseball team season. And yeah, there's not, it's kind of, in a way, it's kind of shifts you to now this quiet time of, you know, Michigan athletics and maybe even looking a little bit closer to football season starting in the fall. So with that, we'll talk a little bit, a little recruiting. I think the biggest news right now is, that CJ Carr, the number 24 overall prospect, according to the 24/7 sports composite rankings in the 2024 class, not the 2023 class, the 2024 class, and the 5th best QB in that class, is announcing his college decision this Thursday. CJ Carr, if that last name sounds familiar, it's because he is the grandson of former Michigan coach Lloyd Carr. But apparently this is not a slam dunk for Michigan. A lot of people feel that, you know, Michigan's among his finalists, but so is Notre Dame. And a lot of people feel that's where this is heading. I don't know. I think the average person might look at that and see the connection and say, this is a terrible look for Michigan. How do they not get, you know, the grandson of one of their former longtime coaches? But maybe there's a little more to it than that.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, like CJ said early in his recruitment that, hey, look, I'm not going to let my family's legacy at Michigan affect my decision. I'm going to build my own relationships, make this my own recruitment, and make my own decision. And I respect him for that. So, yeah, I mean, he's garnered a ton of offers from power programs across the country. And, yeah, I mean, Michigan's been in the running for a while, but I mean, you look at what Notre Dame has done under Marcus Smart in the 2023 cycle. They have the number one overall class in the country, and they already have a couple top 200 prospects. Oh, yeah, Marcus Freeman. Yeah, yeah. Say, Marcus, what am I?
You got NBA finals on your mind.
Watching too much NBA.
yeah. But yeah, I mean, they have a lot of recruiting momentum right now. And quite frankly, Michigan does not. So, I mean, it's not official yet, but if he does pick Notre Dame, you can't really fault the guy for making his own decision and building his own relationships and trying to carve out his own legacy.
This is a tricky spot because Michigan's kind of like, when it comes to legacy recruits, everyone kind of automatically assumes they end up they're going to end up going to the school where their father or their grandfather or whatever played or coached. So if you lose out on the recruit, in this case CJ Carr, it just looks bad because you're just, you know, you're supposed to get the person. But in reality, especially nowadays with NIL and kids, you know, choosing to kind of, you know, chart their own path and oftentimes going out of the state or out of their territory to go to school that they like, it's becoming more commonplace. So it would not surprise me if CJ Carr picks Notre Dame or some other school this week. Make no mistake, it would be a blow because Michigan has been recruiting him hard for the last couple of years. They you know, they offered him a scholarship pretty early on. You know, he lives right down the road. You know, he knows all the stories. You know, he has the legacy thing, and I think that has to work in his favor, you know, with NIL. But, you know, it's his decision, and it's going to be an interesting one made. And it's also important to point out, too, whatever school he announces this Thursday, is it necessarily going to be the one he ends up at? I mean, there's still a long way to go from a recruiting perspective. And by the time he, you know, he signs his NLI. So we'll see. It doesn't look good for Michigan at this point. They are finalists. They're probably one of the final one or two, three. But yeah, all signs certainly point to Notre Dame at this point, which is going to be fascinating to watch play out. And if, in fact, he ends up, you know, signing with Notre Dame.
Great point about the time between now and signing. But the other factor is the, you know, other quarterbacks. I mean, quarterback is a unique position. Only one guy can be on the field at a time at that spot. So they do look at, you know, other guys being recruited, maybe more so than other positions and even other guys in different years. And, you know, Michigan does not have a quarterback commit yet for 2023, if I'm not mistaken, but you know that they're after some guys, including, you know, Dante Moore is a name I see pop up a lot. You know, a Detroit kid who's, you know, another five star. So that could that factor in as well?
It could, but now it almost becomes like Dante Moore is a must land for Michigan because according to 24/7 Sports, that Moore is one of three quarterback offers Michigan has extended in the 2023 class, and the other two guys are already committed elsewhere. So it's like Michigan's putting all their eggs in this basket, but like Carr, Moore is attracting attention from schools across the country and will not be an easy recruitment to win. So this, I mean, they're still going to recruit CJ Carr. It's not, they're not going to just, all right, oh, he's off the board now. We'll put all of our attention elsewhere. So it's not over yet, but it could be a big blow. I know Michigan has offered a lot more guys in that 2024 class. I mean, even just this past weekend, they had the number two overall quarterback commit in that, or quarterback in the 2024 class visit Michigan. So that is Jaden Davis from North Carolina. Number two overall national recruit as well. So a high five-star kind of guy. So yeah, they have nine offers extended. Seven of them are top 200 guys. So they're definitely looking elsewhere for a quarterback too. It's not the end of the world, but Michigan needs to land. They can't go two cycles with striking out on some of their top targets. So a lot of pressure on Michigan in the quarterback position here. I mean, you can always throw the transfer portal route, but you would like to develop some of these top talented high school guys and build a program around. So we'll see what happens.
Folks may have forgotten about this, but Dante Moore is another guy that Jim Harbaugh and Michigan have been after for a very long time.
You know, Jim offered first offer in like eighth grade,
Jim offered him back in 2018 as a seventh grader. And it made headlines at that point. It was a big deal because, you know, middle schoolers were fielding offers, but that was rare for Jim Harbaugh and just Michigan program to throw an offer out like that. But Jim was very intrigued by Dante early on. He liked his athleticism and his arm, and he liked everything about him. So he's been in on him for a very long time. Now just because you offer a kid first doesn't, you know, obviously necessarily, you know, put you in the running when push comes to shove. But for him to be an elite quarterback and given Jim Harbaugh's pedigree at the position and him being an in-state kid and everything else, and the fact that they are considered a finalist for him, they need to land him or CJ. They need to come up with one of these guys. And if not, it's hard to spin it positively. I mean, you've got to recruit some top-tier quarterbacks. Jim's you know, track record so far, you know, during his time here has been a little checkered. You got to land one. I mean, he got JJ. They're still waiting, obviously, on him to play that out with the quarterback position. But the future, they need another like JJ McCarthy. And you know, if you whiff on both of these, you know, it's tough.
I know we've got some other football news to discuss. Is there any recruiting topics you want to hit on outside of the quarterback spot?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote about this last week. I mean, June is a huge month for Michigan to try and build some momentum. So the first visit weekend of the month was last week, and they only had a couple guys in town on officials. 2 4-star defensive backs, Daniel Harris out of Dover Prep in Florida, and then Jordan Matthews from Baton Rouge. Two defensive backs, and that I don't think Michigan is near the top of their list, but hey, they're down on campus and are going to continue to work at them. But starting June 10th weekend and June 17th weekend, there's going to be a lot of guys in Ann Arbor, and Michigan's going to try and roll out the red carpet, try and fortify some relationships that maybe were damaged a little bit during the offseason. A lot of offseason turnover on Jim Harbaugh's coaching staff again. So Michigan needs to start building something here because, yeah, only 6 commits right now, a class that ranks outside the top 20, and a lot of the Wolverines' rivals are doing pretty well on the recruiting trail. So a pivotal month for the Wolverines, and we'll see if they can end a little bit of a drought here because they haven't landed any commitments since March. So it's starting to get to crunch time here.
Not only was there turnover on his staff, but it's important to point out Jim Harbaugh almost left. Yes. Now you can take him at his word and say that, you know, if him saying he's not, you know, he's done with the NFL and he's not going to go there. But I have to think if you're a recruit and your recruit's parents, that gives you some pause. They've got some things to figure out this week. This month is going to be huge. I think they need to land some commitments by the 4th of July weekend. We'll see. But they need some momentum, and they got an opportunity here the next couple of weeks to try and get some.
Aaron, you recently spoke to Jim Harbaugh. Yes, he appeared at a camp, and what did he have to say?
Yeah, he was in a good mood. It was last week at the Ferris State camp where they kind of attract all these big name head coaches. James Franklin from Penn State was there. PJ Fleck was there. You know, Eastern, Western, Central were well represented. Jim Harbaugh was there as well. Gave his little 3 or 4 minute spiel. Told the youngsters that if they're doing something good, keep it up. Kind of, you know, very similar tone of what he told us in the spring, what he told the Michigan players, you know, keep doing you, keep improving, get a little better. And that was kind of his message. Afterwards, he talked to us, the reporters, for about 15, 20 minutes. He seemed in a good mood. We asked him about a breadth of topics, NIL being one of them. I thought his answer was fascinating. We wrote about it kind of last week on MLive. The story's up there. But, you know, I asked him specifically how much he had been hearing about NIL on the recruiting trail when he walked into homes and, you know, what he was hearing. He said he was hearing a lot of it. But he cautioned he didn't know how much of it was accurate, which I think is fascinating because, you know, we've been hearing all these stories about kids potentially landing 6-figure deals, maybe 7-figure deals. But a lot of it just hasn't, you know, come out publicly. So Jim seems a little cautious about all that. He says he wants Michigan to be a transformational experience for a football player, not transactional, which I think is fascinating because on the same day, I mean, there's a story up at our sister site, cleveland.com, from the guys who cover Ohio State. But earlier that day, literally that same day, Ryan Day was in Columbus, Ohio, talking to business folks, telling them that Ohio State's football program needed $13 million to try and lure some of the big time recruits and some of their current players next year, because I think the way Day explained it, which I thought was fascinating and very eye-opening, is they're anticipating a lot of their top guys enter the transfer portal every single year to see what type of offers they can field elsewhere. So it's going to be a fascinating, next couple of years. I think Day said he expects things to be ironed out from a national perspective in 2 to 3 years, but for now, you know, these NIL deals are important to some of these top recruits. And Jim Harbaugh basically confirmed that to us. He said he was hearing a lot of it. And it remains unclear how Michigan is trying to, you know, get inroads there. That's, I guess, another topic for another day, but it was a fascinating discussion. Jim was pretty open and talking about the subject.
And then a lot of these players have been having camps too, I see. And I wanted to ask you, like, in the last 2 years, you kind of got a throw out because of COVID or whatever. Let's go back to, say, the summer of 2019. Were this many players involved in camps, or is this an NIL thing?
Yeah, not nearly as many. You'd see an occasional one. You know, someone maybe would go back to their hometown and have one, and mm-hmm. But it wasn't a weekly thing, I felt like. Now you're right. It's been happening almost every weekend. You know, last month, I think I went out to Paw Paw out near Battle Creek, where Carson Barnhart, Michigan's offensive lineman, was from. He held his own thing. A couple of weeks ago, Donovan Edwards went back to West Bloomfield High School, held a camp. J.J. McCarthy did a camp in Chicago. So, yeah, it's starting to become more of a thing. You know, guys are going out there. Sometimes they're doing it for free. Since over the weekend here in Ann Arbor, you know, the Tough Foundation, founded by former Michigan linebacker Adam Shibley and a couple other guys, they held a free camp that where none of the guys weren't getting paid. And they were just kind of showing up to, out of the goodness of their heart. But in some of these cases, yes, these guys are making money. They're profiting off these things, at the same time helping and getting involved with the youth. So, yeah, it's certainly become more of a thing. I suspect it's going to continue. Especially for some of these big name guys. I mean, like, you know, like a JJ or Donovan Edwards or, you know, whoever it is, they can make a few bucks from a camp in the summer, you know, why not?
All right. Yeah. So what other, football, I mean, I saw a Ronnie Bell headline. I mean, a little more optimism about, you know, his ability to return and help the team in the fall.
Yeah. He says he's been cleared to return to practice. He did not practice during the spring. He was still being kind of held out while he was recovering from his torn ACL. He says he's good to go. He says he's able to practice and take hits and everything else. Now, he hasn't taken a hit yet since that that punt return that injured him last year in week one. But he's looking back. He said he's looking forward to getting back out there and playing again. You know, he says he feels like he's back to normal, maybe even in better shape than he was pre-injury. Obviously, time will tell with that. And I'm really curious to see how his speed and his acceleration looks. ACLs, you never know. You know, some guys are never the same afterwards. Some are just fine. So it's going to be interesting. You know, he says he's ready to get back out there. He says he's open to returning punts again. You know, we have a story up on MLive.com. I think I published yesterday. But I think the illuminating comments out of the interview we had with him was that, you know, he doesn't blame anyone for the injury. You know, folks were critical. You might recall afterwards of Jim Harbaugh and the coaching staff using him on the punt return. He says, you know, if you're going to blame anyone, blame me, because I'm the one that won the job and I'm the one that wanted to do it. And he says he'd be willing to do it again. You know, he said if they ask him to do it, he's going to go out there. He's been doing it for a long time. He did it in high school. So it's a position he thinks he's very good at, and he's going to continue in addition to receiver, who, you know, I think Michigan, it became apparent last year, and we talked about this, I felt like ad nauseum every week, but Michigan needed that playmaking receiver. Up until maybe Angelo Anthony at Michigan State week, they didn't really have one. So I think if Ronnie looks maybe like 90% of what he was before the injury, I think they've got one. It's going to be a help to Michigan's, I think, passing game.
All right. Well, to kind of wrap up where we left off with the Michigan men's basketball roster since our last episode, Musa Diabate and Caleb Houston did in fact stay in the NBA draft. You know, no major announcements from them. With Diabate, it was, you know, I don't know, his handler who's in France. I mean, I messaged him. He's like, yep, he's staying in the draft. Okay. Caleb Houston was, you know, through Michigan. They just, you know, put out a tweet, he's staying in the draft, you know, which is perfectly fine. It's just different than how some other guys do it. I mean, Franz Wagner last year, you know, had a 1,000-word letter he put on, you know, the Players Tribune, kind of describing his decision and his time in Michigan. But, you know, when you only have 1 year at Michigan, it's a little different. So they're gone. Certainly some, you know, frustration. I wrote about this for M Live, you know, from some fans feeling like, you know, they are both one and duns, but, you know, not all one and duns are created equally. And while they started for Michigan, it's like, you know, I don't know, neither of them were the Big Ten freshman of the year, you know, or all Big Ten, you know, even third team or honorable mention. You know, they weren't like carrying the team. So it was just, I think there's some frustration that they didn't, you know, just unfulfilled, you know, potential, untapped potential that won't be seen at Michigan. But, you know, going forward, it means that there's, you know, now a couple open scholarship spots, and, you know, you lose four of the five starters from the team and, you know, a lot of guys from the rotation. It's Hunter Dickinson and then a lot of unproven guys. So, Yeah, they could. They could hit the transfer portal. I wrote about it last week. A bunch of names. Since then, you've actually had some more guys enter. As a grad transfer, that deadline doesn't really seem to apply. You've had some guys that I listed, commit elsewhere. And then you had a couple of guys that I may have just missed, to be honest. There's over, I think I saw some like 6,000 guys in it still. So it's hard to keep track of all these guys. But there's Pete Nance from Northwestern is certainly a you'd think would be a perfect fit for Michigan. But there's others too, that I listed, and then some that I didn't, like Joey Baker from Duke, and Jacob Grandison from Illinois. So there's possibilities, if Michigan wants to add some guys, but they might not. They definitely might not, and just kind of sit with their roster and not tinker with it anymore. So we'll see.
I hear there's a guy named Amani Bates still in the transfer portal.
There's also Amani Bates. He's still out there. I mean, geez, a former, number one recruit in his class is available. I have no reason to change what I initially, said here, which was that I didn't think there was mutual interest from Michigan. They have the spots now, have some need at that kind of position. But, I think there's always a little more to it than that. So if they do add, I still don't think it will be him. But we'll see. He has not announced where he's going yet.
Let's just say there's a lot of baggage that comes with Amani Bates if you bring him on from right. outside. I mean, not even from him, but just his camp and the hoopla and the hype and everything else. And I'm not speaking for Michigan, but if I was a coach, you gotta consider whether you want something like someone like him with the hype and all the extracurriculars that come with it on the team.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I think that kind of wraps up this episode of Wolverine Confidential. Stay tuned for more coverage on MLive.com/Wolverines. Thanks for listening.